This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking about young adult volunteering, both in the U.S. and internationally. And we have two guests by phone, Christy Click and Chad Pittman. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Now, you've both been involved in faith-based volunteering. Let's talk a little bit about where you were. Let's begin with you, Christy. You did some international volunteering. Tell us about it.
I did. I was based out of Quetzaltenango, which is also known as Xela, in the highlands of Guatemala. I spent the whole year there, so it was a fantastic experience.
And when did that begin and when did it end?
Well, that began in late August and also ended in late August, so about 12 months.
And when did you finish?
I finished in late August.
Just last August 2012.
Yes.
So you're sort of just back.
Yes, exactly. Just readjusting.
Now, how did you, what intrigued you about this? Why were you willing to give a year out of your life to do this kind of volunteering work in Guatemala?
Well, I grew up in the church, in the Presbyterian Church USA, who sponsors this volunteer program that I took part in. And I've always had people throughout my life tell me that they thought I would be a good candidate for this program, that they thought it would be something of great interest to me. I'm very interested in mission and mission work and the mission of the church, and I love to travel. And so it was somewhat of a still small voice, if you will, throughout my youth. And I finally came to a point in my life where I thought God kind of opened up time for me to go and do this.
Now, you did this right after college?
Actually, I did this right after college. I went to seminary. I started seminary and completed 2 years at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary down in Austin, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And I took a break from that. I decided, you know what, I'm really loving what I'm learning here, and I just felt God calling me to go out and do some of it.
Where had you been an undergraduate?
I was at Shriner University in Kerrville, Texas, which, as of yesterday, has now been placed on the map thanks to Johnny Manziel, our Heisman winner. Yeah,
Johnny Football.
Yeah, that's right.
And you'd had 2 years at Austin Theological Seminary and then took this year in Guatemala. I want to hear in detail what you did there, of course, but let's get Chad introduced a bit more. Chad, you've done your volunteering domestically. Tell us about where you went first and where you are currently now.
Yeah. I spent my first volunteer year in Denver, Colorado, doing some social work with an organization called Denver Urban Ministries. And now I'm serving a second year, actually. I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, doing some chaplaincy work at Tulane Medical Center and at the port here with an organization called Global Maritime Ministries.
And when did you do your first stint in Denver, Colorado? Where were you in terms of your schooling?
So I got my bachelor's degree in music education from Middle Tennessee State University. And then I took the following year, the year, and that was May of 2010 when I got that. And then the year following that, I worked at First Presbyterian Church of Murfreesboro as a youth director and also taught percussion at Franklin High School near Nashville. So after that, during that year, I knew that I was looking more at an opportunity for doing intentional Christian community, living in community with other young adults who were kind of going through similar circumstances as me and kind of doing life together. Doing year-long mission is one of the ways to do that, especially stateside. I applied to the program, I guess, about a year after I graduated college.
And did you find that having had training in music was helpful when you were doing either social work or chaplaincy?
It's actually, I've gotten an opportunity here in New Orleans with chaplaincy to play some around the hospital, and I put my name in with the concierge, and sometimes people need some singing or some uplifting, and I've been able to play some music doing that. Of course, it hasn't been the main thing. The main thing for me has really been the intentional Christian community aspect of it.
But still, it must be nice to be in a place like New Orleans that really appreciates good music.
It is. Barely a week goes by that I don't see some great live music down here.
Christy, let's get back to you. Tell us a little bit about what was your first impression in Guatemala.
Absolutely. My first impression, the Guatemalan people are a very warm and welcoming community. The people there just, I felt like with my host family even, I mean, it didn't take long for them to accept me as one of their own, and I just felt that the culture is just so warm and kind, and it's a beautiful country, and so that was probably my first impression.
And did you speak Spanish?
You know, a little bit in high school, a little bit in college, but however, when we arrived in Guatemala, part of the program included an 8-week kind of rigorous Spanish training. So I was in Spanish class for 8 hours a day for about 8 weeks.
And
so that was very helpful.
And did that allow you to function pretty well in the language for that year?
It did. However, what was probably most helpful was the fact that I had to live with a host family, and so it was kind of more sink or swim. You know, if you don't speak Spanish, you're kind of up a creek. So I had to, in order to communicate things that I needed with my host family, I was kind of forced to use what I had been learning for the past 8 weeks. So.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Dallas, Texas.
So you had a lot of Spanish speakers probably around you in school with you?
Yes, absolutely. That's been actually funny. When I came back from Guatemala in August, I was in the Houston airport, and I found myself assisting a lot of travelers in baggage claim who were trying to find their way around, or some other airport employees who needed to communicate with some other travelers. So that was a little uplifting when I came back. I thought, okay, great, this is going to be useful here.
So. Now, what was your actual assignment in Guatemala?
Right. I was a Jill of all trades, if you will. I did several things. One, I worked for CEPA, which stands for Centro Ecumenico de Integración Pastoral, which means Central Ecumenical Pastoral Integration. And because of religious and cultural beliefs, families have a lot of children in Guatemala. And so you've got a family of 11, and you got to feed all of those children. And while there are child labor laws there, people don't always adhere to them. So you have 7-year-olds who are expected to pull their own weight, so to speak, and they find themselves working in markets. So CEPA, amongst many other things, strategically builds and runs schools and markets. And so one of my jobs was to be a teacher in one of those schools. And I taught elementary school in the mornings, and I taught junior high and high school in the afternoons, where I taught how to read and write in Spanish.
So these are kids who are having to work and help support their families at very young ages, and this is a ecumenical, a religious, faith-based group that sent you to teach those students how to read and write where they were working.
Exactly. Yep.
Wonderful. Very creative.
Mm-hmm.
How ecumenical is the group?
I would say fairly ecumenical. I mean, my students were Catholic or Presbyterian or Baptist. I mean, they had several different denominations that were represented.
How many kids would you have?
I guess in the mornings we had about 30 students, and in the afternoon there were about 60. And so I rotated. They kind of rotated me from classroom to classroom.
How many other teachers were there in this program?
In the morning it was just myself and another teacher, so we each had about 15. And in the afternoon there was myself and two others. So between the three of us we each had about 20 kids at any given point in time.
And what was your undergraduate major?
I received my double bachelor's at Shriner University in psychology and religion.
So not education?
Not education. No, not education, which is interesting. I love children, but my other job in Guatemala was actually with older adults. So I kind of had the two extremes. I had two different generations there.
Well, let's hear about that in a minute, but let me take a second just to reintroduce our guests. For people who may have joined the show late, we're talking today with Christy Click. She spells her first name with a K, K-R-I-S-T-I, Click, C-L-I-C-K, and Chad Pittman, P-I-T-T-M-A-N, both who have been young adults volunteering in faith-based organizations. Chad here in the U.S. and Christy internationally in Guatemala for a year. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs, and I ask questions best I can, but I'm happy to have people who are listening call in and ask a question or make a comment, perhaps share one of your experiences. The phone numbers to do that, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois listing area, in the 217 area code, punch in your phone 333-9455. That's 217-333-WILL. If it's a long-distance call, including if you're listening on the Internet or on one of your smartphones somewhere, other devices, there's an 800 number, 222-9455. So that's a toll-free call, 800-222-9455. That'll put you in touch with our engineer here in the studio, Kyle Croa, and she'll get you in line to talk with one or both of our guests today, talking about young adult volunteering. This program, of course, will also be archived very quickly in a week or so. And if you missed part of this program or would like to hear previous programs that are part of our archive, you may do that by going to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Leave the G off of keeping, and you'll be able to find this program and many others. There's a search box. You can put in a topic. You can put in a name and find that program to listen to at your convenience. Well, let's get back to you, Chad. We'll try to give you both equal time as best I can. Tell us what you did, first of all, in Denver as a social worker.
So in Denver, I worked at Denver Urban Ministries, and man, we did a lot of stuff there. We had they still are doing great stuff. They have a food bank. They do rental and utility assistance. They have some basic job training and resume building for usually like low income families and individuals. And it was really, really great. I had a great experience there.
How big of a operation is the Denver Urban Ministries? It's a big city, of course.
It's a big city, but it was a relatively small organization. I think it's classified as maybe a medium-sized nonprofit. There were about 10 of us that worked there.
And was that ecumenical or just based with one or two religious groups?
It was founded by the Methodist Church about 30 years ago. But since then, it's become its own freestanding nonprofit. So it no longer is like under the direct supervision of a church. Their mission is to meet people's basic needs, you know. So,
is it strictly Christian, or is it also supported by Jewish or Muslim or other religious traditions?
I believe their support generally comes from Christian denominations, but they're certainly not exclusive in any way.
Now, with your music background, what did you end up doing there specifically?
I was a social worker. I had a crash course. It was really great. You know, I had some friends who were studying social work who were really impressed at the things I was able to do and the experience I was able to get. You know, they would some of them would kill for an interview for an internship like that. But I met with people individually and. Kind of tried to see where their needs were. We tried to keep people housed and keep people's lights on, and encourage them in that. We had a food bank, and so I would do intake or work the front desk at the food bank and try and hook people up with groceries when they needed them. And I taught a resume workshop there, and kind of did an orientation to the job services center, which is on the second floor. We had a computers and a printer for people to use on some phones and a phone bank so people can look for jobs up there. It was really great. I did a whole lot of stuff. I was a man of many hats there.
And you were there for a full year?
A full year. I think technically I was working for about 11 months. You know, I had a couple of orientation and things like that. But
sure. And how did you first hear about this program that would send you to these interesting places?
You know, I was really blessed. There's a young adult volunteer site in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was a member of the campus ministry at Middle Tennessee State, the Presbyterian Student Fellowship. And before we would go on our spring break trips, usually the Yavs would come down and just do a little presentation, say these are the kinds of things we're doing, this is what our program is about, and you know, maybe after college this is something you would be interested in. And every time they came, my interest was piqued even more. And so by the time I graduated, I knew that that was something I wanted to do.
Of course, there are many religious organizations that have these opportunities for young people. But why don't you share, if you know it by heart, how a young person today at a campus might contact your particular, the group that sent you to these? Do you have a website or an address?
Yeah, absolutely. PCUSA.org. You can check out there, and then just search in the engine the Young Adult Volunteer Program. And there's actually probably a more direct site that I could send you to, but I unfortunately don't have it on me right now.
That's fine. PCUSA.org, and then check for Young Adult Volunteering. I want to find out more about what you're doing as a chaplain, but we're getting close to about 20 minutes into the program, and I have several announcements to make here locally. We try to keep people in the Central Illinois area aware of some interesting opportunities, and we do have coming up. In fact, tonight at 7 p.m., there's a free musical program, Joyous Songs of the Season, and there are four singing groups, Parkland Chamber Singers, Parkland Chorus, two groups from Urbana High School, the Honors Choir, and an a cappella group called Vocal Chords Required. That's tonight at 7 o'clock, a free program, December 9th, 2012, Sunday evening at McKinley Presbyterian Church, 809 South 5th Street in Champaign. Free, open to the public. Should be some wonderful, wonderful music. And that's tonight. There may be some people listening right now who are coming home from Sinai Temple, where there was a concert this afternoon with some wonderful singers doing historical Jewish liturgical music in celebration of the 90th birthday of Rabbi Isaac Newman. I wasn't able to go to that getting ready for this program, but I was happy to announce it last week, and hope people were able to get out and enjoy that. Coming up next week, also on Sunday night, there is a concert at 7:30 at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign, Illinois, by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. It will include also singers from the University High School Madrigals, the Bach Chorus and Orchestra, and that's at Holy Cross, 7:30. This is a traditional holiday concert, and it's been going on for a decade or two, and people really look forward to this every year. It costs $20 for a ticket for adults, $10 for students. That's Holy Cross Catholic Church on 405 West Clark Street in Champaign, 7:30, Sunday, December 16. Another musical event, Sunday, December 30th, The Chorale from the Champaign County area will be performing at the Vineyard Church at 7 p.m., that's 1500 North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana, A World in Tune, Winter Around the World, music played by the Urbana Pops Orchestra, the Chorale Singers, and special guest soprano Molly Dutcher, and pianist Derek Manfiora, both young adult scholarship winners from the Chorale. That's Sunday, December 30. At the Vineyard. That has been in the past a New Year's Eve concert, but because the Virginia Theater is being repaired, they can't have it there. The venue they could find was available for December 30 for the large crowd that always enjoys that annual concert. So Sunday, December 30, 7 o'clock at the Vineyard for the Chorale. Tomorrow there'll be a lecture at the University of Illinois sponsored by Central Illinois Islamic Center by Professor Jonathan Brown. That'll be at 6 o'clock Monday night, the 10th of December, dealing with the Prophet Muhammad and pluralism. How does Islam deal with other faiths? That's a free lecture. by Professor Jonathan Brown on the Prophet Muhammad at 151 Everett Lab, the corner of Green and Wright Street on the University of Illinois campus, 6 p.m., sponsored by CIMIC, Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. Well, those are some of the special programs coming up here locally that we'd like to let listeners know about. Let's get back to our guest today. We're talking with Christy Click, who is currently returning as a student to Austin Theological Seminary for, is this your third year, Christy?
Yes, this is my third year.
And that's your last year, I presume.
Well, yes, except that I suppose I can't get enough of graduate academia. And so while I was in Guatemala, I also applied to be a dual degree student. So I'm currently at the University of Texas studying for a master's in social work.
Ah, a combination of a master's in social work, MSW, and a seminary degree.
Exactly, yes, a master's in divinity. So ideally, God willing, I will graduate in May of 2014 with both degrees.
And what do you anticipate doing with a degree in both social work and in divinity, theology?
Well, there's a lot of things that I'm interested in, but currently I think I'd like to be an associate pastor of mission and pastoral care. I think that those are the two parts of ministry that I'm most passionate about and feel most called to.
Now, how do you do a dual degree program? Do you do one for a while and then the other, or are you taking classes in both simultaneously?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, they're very flexible down here for me. Next semester, for example, I will be taking the majority of my classes will be at the University of Texas School of Social Work, but I will be taking one class at Austin Seminary. So it just depends per student kind of what they need. They try to cater things to your needs.
Now, how far apart geographically, for those of us who haven't been to Texas recently, is Austin and University of Texas?
Oh, well, they're Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary and the University of Texas are right across the street from each other.
It's about a
10-15-minute walk from classes for me.
Wow. Makes it very easy.
Exactly, yes.
And Austin's a wonderful city, also a great place to hear good music.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Dad, you should come visit.
I have, actually. I started an application there, so we'll see.
Well, there you go.
Have you two actually met one another before this conversation?
Yes.
Yeah.
We did orientation and reentry together.
So let's talk about orientation. What did they, when you sign up to be a volunteer as a young adult, what kind of orientation should a young person expect? What will happen? Let's have you start, Chad.
Sure. Well, they had us all meet at a retreat center up in Stony Point, New York. The Stony Point Retreat Center. While we're there, they brought in some great speakers and handed out some good materials. Just kind of took some time to present us with things that we could expect. Some of the sessions were different for national people and international people, but they just try to kind of give you a heads up on things you're going to expect during your year.
What do you remember most, Christy, about the orientation session?
What I remember most, they talked a lot, in my case, during the international kind of orientation group, they talked a lot about what to expect culturally as a female in a Latin or Central America, Latin country, what that would look like, and also kind of the diet, what that would look like. Their potable water is not as filtered as ours here is in the United States. So those were kind of some heads up that I remember hearing about.
And did you feel adequately prepared for being in a Latino culture as a female?
I think I did, but that might have had, the fact that I live in Texas might have had some to do with that as well. I kind of went in as a strong woman, going for a master's degree. I kind of had to say to myself, okay, this might be a little bit challenging. There might be some comments that I'll just have to work with. And, there were the general wear long pants, wear long sleeves, be respectful, that sort of thing. So I felt like I was adequately prepared, absolutely.
And in terms of diet going to Guatemala, what did you discover once you got there?
Well, those listening to this program who know me know that I was sick a couple of times. I did experience having parasites and amoebas, which was not my most favorite memory from my year. But, the children there, when they grow up, they're just used to different types of bacteria than we are. And so that was a little challenging for my system to adjust. And any Guatemalan that comes here to the United States faces the same issue with our different foods and different means of preparing meals.
Sure. Now, Chad, you didn't have those kind of experiences going to Denver, but were there challenges being in a different sort of subculture within the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. The challenges were certainly different. I lived in a part of town where I come from, Knoxville, Tennessee, originally, and then Nashville, and there certainly were a vast variety of cultures all kind of smashed into one place. In Denver, there's a heavy Hispanic Latino culture. There's a very urban culture. There's a very white privileged culture. There's a large homeless population. You know, and all of these different types of people live in very close proximity. And so it was a very eye opening experience for me.
Let's talk a little bit about how your background in terms of your Christian faith helped you or did not as you encountered these differences. Christy, you were dealing in a very ecumenical setting with people from a lot of different religious backgrounds. You were teaching these children how to read and write. Was your faith how was your faith involved in that?
Absolutely. Well, there were a lot of other instances where my co-teacher, conveniently in the mornings, was male, and so there were a lot of instances where some of the girls needed kind of some guidance and some mentoring, and so I was thankfully able to provide that. And having some background in pastoral care, I was able to implement some faith-enriching practices with these mainly young girls who were needing some guidance.
Okay, give us an example.
Well, for example, I had a lot of students. Unfortunately, another part of Guatemala's culture is that it's kind of run rampant with domestic violence and some drugs. And so I had a lot of children who, unfortunately, their parents had gotten involved in some of those things, anywhere from drugs to prostitution to family violence. And so some of my kids were actually living in orphanages. And we're just having a real hard time. You know, it's hard being a teenager enough as it is, but when you throw in the other complicated stuff, and they didn't really have any older women to kind of talk to and help them. And so I was able to provide that with them and able to implement, because I worked for an ecumenical program, I was able to implement some faith-based stuff.
And you'd had 2 years of seminary after college before you went to Guatemala. And you had courses in pastoral care?
Yes, exactly. And I had also, the summer before I left, had been a chaplain in a hospital in downtown Dallas. So that was very helpful. I gained a lot of skills. I'm certain that God had a plan in the way that things panned out with having that experience under my belt before going and working with these kids.
You talked about the difference in ages working with grade school age kids in the morning and then high school, middle school in the afternoon. That's quite a challenge. As I remember those ages, the middle school can be one of the toughest as kids are approaching puberty and have all those hormones firing. What was your experience in Guatemala?
Well, again, with having some children who didn't really have a lot of mentors or family that they could rely on or look up to, my co-teacher would come to me and say, hey, I'm a guy, I have this girl, she's approaching that age, and she just really needs a mentor, another girl to talk to. Would you mind having this conversation with her? Talk to her about the changes that she's going through and that it's normal, and because some of these kids didn't really have anyone that could talk to them about that. And so with the teenagers, I did some of that, and then I had mentioned that these real-life issues that are hard to talk about, that there's a lot of prostitution and drugs and familial violence. Sometimes I would have to take some of these teenage girls aside and say, hey, look, I've been noticing this, that, and the other, and because I care for you and I think you're of great value, I think maybe we could talk about this. You know, let's have a conversation and let's make sure you're on the right track before, you know, you get out of school and don't have the skills. You know, if you don't pay attention to your studies and you don't gain the skills here to be successful in Guatemala or in your culture or with everything going on, you know, let's just make sure that you've got some morals and values instilled in you. So I did some of that.
And, Chad, when you were doing social work in Denver, did you get involved in needing to provide some sex education information there, too, like Christy did?
No, not really. That wasn't really a part of it for me. I saw mainly adult individuals.
Okay.
or low-income families.
And you were dealing mainly with poverty?
Yes, definitely poverty. And also in our job services program, we dealt a lot with guys who had served their time in prison and who were maybe trying to come out of halfway houses, trying to find work, trying to get back into our society, you know, and trying to get back on their feet, I guess.
And you were doing that at a time when the national employment situation was very tough for anybody, let alone if you had a record.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a very difficult time for finding work for people.
What kind of arguments could you use on behalf of clients when you were talking with potential employers?
Well, we like to let them know that, especially in Colorado, but nationally, there are incentives for employers to hire people with convictions and especially with felonies. There are benefits you can get, almost like insurance for them, so that. With the idea that, you know, these guys needed some special attention when it comes to finding work.
Let's talk a little bit about the reentry process for when you came back from, say, Guatemala, Christy. You had, again, a big change going from a developing country to the United States. Tell us how you dealt with that and how the program that you were in helped you deal with that.
Absolutely. When we came back to the United States, Chad and I, myself, along with the other volunteers, both national and international, gathered together, and they kind of talked to us, and they said, hey, this is some of the stuff that you're going to go through, psychologically, emotionally, maybe even physically, and here's how to deal with it, and here's who you can talk to, and work with. So their expertise in this kind of thing are just fantastic. I mean, they know how to help us reenter, but that doesn't mean that we're still not going to experience some difficult stuff. For example, I like to tell this funny story. A friend of mine got married, and there were, I guess, four of us sitting at this table at a restaurant, and I lived with a host family for the entire year, and so I just kind of ate what I was given, and I was not used to making choices and having to choose what I wanted to eat. And so we sit down at this restaurant, and I'm looking at a menu, and I, for the life of me, I couldn't decide if I wanted eggs or toast or, you know, French toast or sausage, biscuits, gravy, and the next thing I know, I am just in tears. I absolutely could not make a decision, and to this day, my friends refer to it as the biscuits and gravy situation. And similarly, I took my 2-year-old niece to go get snow cones, and I couldn't decide a flavor, and I was almost in tears by the end of it. Poor thing was probably confused. But those are kind of the little things that you just don't know are going to trigger you. Those are kind of the sort of experiences I've had.
Totally unexpected.
Absolutely, out of the blue. And aside from food, I was walking through a shopping mall with my boyfriend in September or so, and, you know, my kids, they worked in the markets, they would make, I don't know if you've seen those purses or little crafts that you can make out of, like, Starburst candy wrappers. You can make little things out of those, and my students would do that in Guatemala, and they would sell them in the markets. And I was walking through the mall with my boyfriend, and I saw one of those, and I just lost it. I mean, I just started crying, and he's been very supportive, been a good sport, but you just never know. I mean, in the middle of the mall, in the middle of a restaurant, it just hits you, you know. But that really has made me realize how meaningful this experience was for me. And I really did build good relationships and learn a lot, and my faith was enriched, and it was a very influential time in my life, so.
Chad, how was reentry? You went through it after Denver before you went to New Orleans?
That's true, yeah. For me, it was a really great experience in that, like she was saying, they're really experts on helping kind of guide you through discernment processes and processing experiences. And for me, it was a great time of reflection on my time in Denver, reflecting on the things that I've learned and the things I learned about myself, the things I learned about society, the things I learned about living with other people. And it was a really, really good, peaceful, much needed time for me, for sure. I certainly had a very different experience than people who had been international, but I would say it was really helpful.
And after being sort of embedded in a much poorer part of the culture in the U.S., getting back to a place where there's more affluence, was that a shock?
A little bit for me. I guess for more, it wasn't so much of a shock as it was that I feel like my eyes are a little more open now. I see things that I wouldn't have seen before. I notice things about people that I wouldn't notice before, and about parts of town, and about people who are looking for work, and about social services in general. I learned so much, and so I feel like I certainly have a wider perspective on the way things are, I guess.
And where did you actually live? Christy talked about living with a host family. What about you?
In Denver,
yeah.
West Denver is the part of the town. West Colfax is the name of the area.
But were you just in an apartment, or were you with other people who were in the same program as you, volunteer program?
Yeah. I lived with four other people. There were five of us in the house. And we had, half of a duplex in kind of a poorer part of town in West Denver.
What did it cost you to do this financially?
It didn't cost me a dime. But part of the mission is to get other people involved, and so part of that for me was fundraising. I actually am still kind of working on fundraising for this year currently, if anybody out there is listening. But we raise money to help support the program that we're in, and also to get people in our congregations and our friends and families kind of involved in what we're doing.
Was that the same for you, Christy?
Yes, it was. We're both national and international sites are required to fundraise, though obviously the fundraising requirements are different, given that some of us have to travel a little bit farther and that sort of thing.
How much money did you have to raise to go to Guatemala for a year?
I had to raise $8,000 for the year. However, that is only because, again, this program is so fantastically run, is only a fraction of what needed to be raised. The program has other means of doing that. But I was also fortunate enough with having several churches that were so generous to both pray for me and contribute financially to my year there.
Were these congregations that you had contact with before, or did you just have to make a cold call and say, here's what I want to do, would you support it?
Well, every volunteer is different. For me, because I had a really good relationship with several, being in seminary, had a good relationship with several different congregations, I was able to raise those funds through several congregations, but also friends around the nation who are very supportive of my cause. But I know of other volunteers that have just met at, say, the way the Presbyterian government is, they would go to regional meetings and make an announcement and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. If your congregation's interested in assisting me in this endeavor, here's where you can send a check. And so everyone kind of does it a different way, but that's how I did it. I did go before a couple of congregations and just tell them, hey, this is what I'm doing and this is why, and I hope you will support me any means necessary, and thankfully I was able to raise those funds.
And Chad, you weren't in seminary, so you didn't have that advantage of sort of a network of congregations. How did you raise money right out of college to do this?
I wrote letters to friends and family and kind of explained to them why I was doing what I was doing, and invited them to help me out. I went to my home church in Knoxville and told them what was on my heart, and they were able to contribute a really great amount to help me out. And so it was tough through through correspondence and through talking to friends and family, I was able to get most of the way there.
How much money did you have to raise?
My goal was to raise $6,500.
Okay.
For anybody who's listening who's interested in the program, though, thanks to, I think it's a grant, but for at least the next few foreseeable years, the amount you'll have to raise will be cut in half. So we're really excited about that with the AV program.
Yeah, that is something that unfortunately keeps a lot of folks at bay that would be interested otherwise in the program, I think. That's a little kind of daunting to know that you have to raise those funds. But
the program helps you, the advisors help give you some ideas of how that's possible to do.
Exactly.
Absolutely. There's loads of ways, loads of help and ideas and people to work with to help get that done.
We have about 20 minutes left in the program. Let me let listeners know we've been talking with Christy Click, who's a student both at Austin Theological Seminary and the University of Texas, getting a dual degree, a Master of Divinity in Seminary, and a MSW, Master of Social Work, at the University of Texas at Austin. We're also talking with Chad Pittman, who is in his second placement in this young adult volunteer program through his denomination, and he's currently working in New Orleans as a chaplain. We'll be back and talk to them in just a minute. Let me let listeners know what's coming up next week here on Keeping the Faith. December 16, 2012, I say the year because a whole lot of people download these programs and listen to them at later times. So let me just mention that December 16, 2012, Professor Ty Newell, Professor of Engineering here at the University of Illinois, he's retired now, took early retirement to work particularly on environmental issues. And he recently drove across the country in an all-electric car, the kind you have to plug in to recharge the battery every so often. And we needed to pre-record that program because of Professor Newell's schedule, but that will be broadcast live, or it'll be broadcast December 16. You won't be able to call in with questions, I'm sorry to say, but that'll be December 16, talking about his experiences driving that electric car across the U.S. On December 23rd, our guest will be Sam Smith. He's Community Engagement Director at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts here at the University of Illinois. He'll be talking about how the performing arts how people in the community can be involved with learning more and enjoying more about the performing arts. That'll be Sam Smith on December 23rd. We'll be replaying an archive program on December 30. I'll be traveling, and author Gary Wills, whose new book on Ambrose, Augustine, and the Mystery of Baptism. It's a book, the title is Font of Life, The Mystery of Baptism, Ambrose and St. Augustine. We had a wonderful interview with Professor Gary Wills from Northwestern University back in May, and we'll be replaying that on December 30. And then January 6th, we have a very special program planned, a live program, we hope, if the situation in Palestine and Israel allows. We hope to have a live phone interview on the Orthodox Christmas Eve in Bethlehem. So from Bethlehem on the West Bank, we hope to be talking with Pastor John Setterland, who is a parish volunteer there. That'll be January 6th if the political and situation allows that to happen. Those are some of the programs coming ahead on Keeping the Faith. Well, let's get back to our two guests today. Let's talk a little bit about your situation where you are now, Chad, in New Orleans. How has the recovery from Katrina been as you've been there you started there just this fall?
I did, yeah, about the middle of August. I got down here, and I'm very biased. I love this city. I actually did some Katrina relief through some Katrina rebuild camps through a group called Serve 365 back in 2006, in between my sophomore and junior year of college. So I was down here as a leader and a worship leader at the camps, and I got to really see just kind of the situation that this city was in a few years ago. And I'll tell you, being back here, there's just the idea of rebirth, and there's an energy in the city that's really really beautiful, really healthy, and I'm glad to see the direction that's going.
I realize I neglected to give our phone numbers again for listeners who might have a question for our guest today, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And you're being a chaplain there in New Orleans. Tell us about the hospital.
Oh, it's daunting. Since Katrina, actually, they've only ever had one chaplain at Tulane Medical Center, and it's downtown. It's a very busy, lots of critical patients, they've only been able to have one chaplain there. And so I'm honored, actually, I'm really blessed to be able to assist Reverend Jenny Thomas there at Tulane Medical Center. And it's been really, really challenging and really encouraging. And oftentimes I wonder why I am in the situation that I'm in. But I can't say that a day goes by without me learning a whole lot about life and everything.
Who do you deal with most? What kinds of issues?
Well, it runs the gamut. A lot of people are trying to go through cancer treatment up in that hospital, bone marrow transplant. From that all the way down to bugs and viruses and things. Lots of people are in very vulnerable situations for sure.
Who do you have to support you?
Jenny's really great. I can get in touch with her at any time, and she and I actually have been kind of going through some clinical pastoral education stuff. I'm not necessarily in a program for that, but I'm definitely learning a lot about what it is to be a chaplain, how to kind of differentiate yourself from situations, how to be a healing presence with people, and all kinds of good stuff. So I meet with her often for training to reflect on the meetings I've had and the people I've been able to meet. And she's been a really great guidance and support for me.
Now, Tulane Medical Center is a university-related medical center. It's not supported by any particular religious group, but they're open to having chaplains there. But you need to deal with everyone, right? No matter what their
Absolutely.
Religious background,
yeah.
or if they're agnostic or atheist or whatever, right?
Yeah, and I'll check in with anybody and just let them know that we're around. And we believe that people just get better faster when they tap into their spiritual resources, whatever their background or belief may be. That's not our business, but we just try and be there to connect them with those spiritual resources.
And so many of the churches were devastated in terms of losing their buildings, their pastors, parsonages, manses, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They lost a lot of clergy who there was often no longer a congregation that could support a church. And that obviously affected the number of chaplains who were there too, is that right?
It did, yeah, it definitely did.
So you've had to, as a volunteer, fill in for probably several people.
Yeah, definitely. We would love more volunteers, more people to get down there and kind of help ease the load. But it's been really a blessing for sure.
We're down to our last 5 or 6 minutes. Christy, tell me what you would tell a young adult considering this. Would you encourage them to do it?
Absolutely. The slogan of the Young Adult Volunteer Program is a year of service for a lifetime of change. And what I love about that slogan is that it's very subjective. You can interpret it as you will. For me, it's been a year of service, but a lifetime of change for me. I will forever remember the experiences that I had with these children and these older adults that I worked with and look back on how God was there and God was present. And as Chad mentioned, there were so many times when we, not speak for everyone in the program, but many of us question, why are we here? What is my purpose in this year? And I can think back on that now, and I can relish in the fact that God was there and God was present, leading me, you know, along the beach with the one set of footprints, you know. And while maybe you don't have all the answers as to some of the things that came to fruition in that year, down the road, maybe it'll become clear. So I certainly forever remember lots of my memories and think back on them.
Okay, we're hearing a background noise. I don't know, of course, where it's coming from. It might be from one of your phones, but we'll keep going and do the best we can. Christy, when you talked about a lifetime of change for you, do you also feel like you really made a difference in the life of these young people that you were teaching in Guatemala over that year?
You know, I like to think so. I can remember one particular instance working with the children where some of my kids, when I arrived there, could not read or could not write. And my last week, my co-teacher took me aside and said, hey, there's something I want you to come and see. And one of my students read an entire book to me, and I couldn't, I mean, you know, it was, you know, see spot run, one of those kind of situations, but one of those type of books that I couldn't keep the tears from flowing. I mean, this child who couldn't read, couldn't write, was now doing that as I was leaving. So that was one scenario. And then we didn't talk about some of the other things that I did, but I also interned at a church as a kind of assistant pastor and built some real good relationships with some older adults, one of which I will always remember going to her home. She was sick, and with the pastor, I anointed her and said a prayer with her and with her family. And by the time I came back to visit the next week, she was no longer there. And so I like to think that some of the small things that I did there made a difference in someone's life.
And what about you, Chad? Currently, you're dealing with people who are in serious, many of them are dealing with very serious health issues, but also in your year as a social worker in Denver, before you went to New Orleans, you were dealing with people who needed help. Did you feel good about the kind of help you were able to provide, even though you were kind of learning on the job?
Yeah, definitely learning on the job, but the program is really good at putting you in places where you can be effective, either effective in learning about yourself. And I think anytime I'm learning, it's also doing good for those around me. And in both of my situations, here as a chaplain and last year in social work, I think one of the things I really took away with me is the importance of giving people space to tell their stories. As I was listening to the people who would come in and they were, you know, seeking help to keep their lights on for their children. And we have all these temptations, I know I do, to label people and to judge them before hearing them out. I think the more stories I hear and the more people I meet and the more I understand that there's no place for us to put that on people, but to give them the place to share their stories and who they are. And I think that's done a lot of good for people in situations when I've been able to say, you know, tell me about it. How did you get here? You know?
Now, both of you worked through the Presbyterian Church USA and their young adult volunteering program, and you've spoken very highly of the training you received, the guidance you received, the help in raising money, the grants, the support for doing what you were able to do for a year. Of course, most religious organizations have similar programs, and although you know, we've just dealt with one particular Christian Protestant denomination today, almost every religious group has these kind of opportunities for young people, particularly in the U.S., to do these kinds of years of service. I just encourage listeners, if you know a young person who might want to do this kind of a year, a gap year perhaps, between the middle of their education, college education, higher education, or before or after it, here are two examples of people who have shared with us what they've learned, what they've gained, how they've grown, and what they feel they've contributed. So do look, search within your own religious tradition for opportunities to consider doing this. Within the Presbyterian Church, again, online, you can go to pcusa.org and then search for youth volunteer service opportunities, and you'll find information about that.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just Facebook the Young Adult Volunteer Program, and you'll find us right away.
Young Adult Volunteer Program on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me thank our two guests, Christy Click, who spent a year in Guatemala, who's currently in both Austin and Austin Theological Seminary and University of Texas, getting a dual degree in social work and divinity or theology, and Chad Pittman, who is currently in New Orleans at the Tulane Medical Center as a volunteer, a sort of assistant chaplain, after spending a previous year doing social work at the Urban Ministry Center in Denver, Colorado. Thank you both for being on the program today.
Thank you so much.
I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith programs. Let me just mention a couple of the local events coming up, particularly ones for the season. Again, thanks for all the people who contributed to the 90th birthday celebration of Rabbi Isaac Newman this afternoon at Sinai Temple with that musical program on historic Jewish liturgical music. Tonight at McKinley Presbyterian Church is a free musical program with four different choirs, the Parkland Chamber Singers, the Parkland Chorus, the Urbana High School Honors Choir, and the Vocal Chords Required a cappella group, directed by Todd Taylor. Barbara Zakow directs the Parkland groups. That's tonight at 7 o'clock, a free program at McKinley Church on the corner of John and Fifth Street in Champaign, Illinois. Coming up next week, Sunday night, December 16, 2012, at Holy Cross Catholic Church, a Baroque Christmas, $20 tickets for this wonderful traditional Christian Christmas music, holiday season music, $10 for students. That's on Clark Street in Champaign, Holy Cross Catholic Church, 7:30. And coming up on the 30th of December, the Chorale will be providing a concert, also $20 a ticket, for at the Vineyard Church on North Lincoln Avenue, 7 p.m., A World in Tune, Winter Around the World. Strings from the Urbana Pops Orchestra will be playing, as well as Molly Netter, soprano, and special guest pianist Derek Manfiore. Both are Young Adult Scholarship winners from the Chorale. The Chorale's directed by Julie Byler, and Michael Hammer is the accompanist. Should be a very good concert. Often that's not on New Year's Eve, but this year, because the Virginia Theater is being repaired, it's at the Vineyard Auditorium at the Vineyard Church on North Lincoln Avenue by I-74. That's Sunday, December 30th. At 7 o'clock, you can get tickets at the door, of course, for that. Again, I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Next week, we will be talking with Professor Ty Newell about driving cross-country in an electric car. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square in Urbana, a lifestyle center with unique and independently owned food stores and entertainment facilities like Common Ground Food Co-op and 88 Broadway.
This is Illinois Public Media, W.